And hello, Sun Sounds listeners. This is Andy Bombeck, which means once again it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me today for a good variety of children's stories. Like always, the first half hour, I'll be reading picture books. And then the second half hour, I'm going to continue with and possibly finish the novel that I've been reading now for about 6 months, titled The 57 Bus. But first, let's begin today's program with the picture book titles. I'm going to start off with a book titled Picture Face Lizzie. And then it's The Power of Your Name. If You Live Here. The House of Love. And if we have time, we'll finish up the first half hour with the classic Make Way for Ducklings. So it should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with our first picture book today, titled Picture Face Lizzie. My name is Eve Tanya. I have a lot. I have sneakers that light up, one big lava lamp, a hedgehog named Snoop Hogg, a saltwater fish tank, a freshwater turtle tank, a refrigerator full of adult food, most disturbingly, smoked salmon, a cupboard full of kid food, most excitedly, mac and cheese, a bin full of toys, a desk full of crayons, a three-legged lizard, two brothers, parents who tell me they love me every day, and a puppy named Bluster. But for as much as I have, and as grateful as I am, my life is a tragedy because I don't have a picture face Lizzie. It's not like I haven't asked for a picture face Lizzie. In fact, I've asked for a picture face Lizzie 12 times. My parents have never said no exactly, but they also haven't said yes. It's always some version of, you have such a good imagination. Not wrong. You make amazing creations out of clay. I do. You love to read. True. Do you really want something that might distract from all that, Eve? Yes, I do. And still, no picture face Lizzie. One day, my mom takes my friends, Tara and me, to the shops at the square. We head to our three favorite spots, the candy store, the sneaker store, and the other candy store. I want to go to the pet store, but Tara and Tara pull out their picture face Lizzies and do dance equal pick faces. Tara's Lizzie is blonde and has 20 filters in her pocket watch cam. Tara has Icon Lizzie with 100 upgrades to her sunglass cam, which can also capture video. They post their Lizzie pics to their Dizzy Lizzie portal followers. But I don't get an alert because I don't have a picture face Lizzie. Saturdays are fun, but busy because I have gymnastics. My handstands, bridges, and forward rolls are all top of the class. Miss Arena whistles and says, "That is how it must be." At the end, Miss Irina leads my group in a unified dance to three Lizzie Glam Squad pop songs, Pink It Up or Else, Dabble and Smack, and Five Hydrant Red Lipstick. But I don't know any of the lyrics to these songs because I don't have a picture face Lizzie. Well, in school, everyone talks about the latest upgrades to their picture face Lizzies. including a new Lizzie backpack that holds extra battery power, a medical assistant Lizzie that can scan you for fever, and even a baby Lizzie, itty bitty Lizzie, that blinks and takes pictures through its adorable tiny baby eyes. I pretend to work on my creative writing. I wish I could share my itty-bitty Lizzie selfies, but I can't because I don't have an itty-bitty Lizzie, or any picture-face Lizzie, for that matter. When I go to Sammy's birthday party, the theme is, yep, you guessed it, picture-face Lizzie. Everyone is getting their faces painted with different Lizzie-themed looks, designing DIY accessorial Lizzies using beads, glitter, and stickers, bouncing in a giant Lizzie bounce house, or eating a slice of Lizzie cake. When it's over, everyone gets picture face digital credits, which are worthless to me because, number one, don't have a picture face Lizzie. Well, tonight is my first sleepover at my new friend Ava's house. I get there at 5 o'clock on the dot, actually 4:40, but I make my mom wait in the car with me because I don't want to walk in too early. Ava has a limited edition, state-of-the-art talk and respond next-gen superhero Lizzie. She is basically a drone doll that can take 8K pictures from the sky. I borrow one of Ava's Lizzies, and her flying Lizzie takes a picture of us from above. The rest of the night, I pretend to understand all the things she's saying about them. Why do I pretend? Because I have no experience with a picture-face Lizzie. Picture-face Lizzie, cons. I may never stop hugging you. Pros, social acceptance. Easy use for family photographs. Easier and cheaper than a new pet. Will prevent me from watching too much TV. Will distract me from fighting with siblings. I will never complain again in my life. I tell my parents how much I want a picture-face Lizzie and how I feel a little left out because it seems like everyone else has one. And then the most unexpected and amazing thing happens. They hand me a wrapped gift. Inside is STEM Lizzie, who can do math problems and has photo lenses built into her safety goggles, sold separately. I am the happiest I have ever been because I now have a Lizzie. And she's holding it up. For the next 2 days, I catch up on everything. I sign up for my own Dizzy Lizzie portal account. Username, never too late, to Liz10. If you want to follow me. And post 47 pictures and 16 videos of STEM Lizzie and me reading books, playing with Bluster, taking a water-free bath, singing Pink It Up or Else, eating breakfast together, and of course, cuddling under the blankets in Liz Selfie night mode. Now I have 24 follow Lizzies, including Ava, who says she had never heard of STEM Lizzie, but just ordered one. I write LOL Liz, which is something you can only do if, like me, you have a picture-face Lizzie. Tara and Tara are so excited that I have a PFL, that we all go to the shops at the square and film ourselves dancing down the cobblestones with our Liz Squad cams. Then we go to the candy store and do the hashtag Lizzie Jelly Bean Challenge until our Lizzies run out of batteries. I squeeze my eyes shut and think super duper hard and come up with a plan. I grab the Terras and we run over to the pet store to play with the kittens, talk to the parakeets, and pet the puppies. It's so much fun. We almost forget that we have picture face Lizzies. At gymnastics, I am happy to finally have a reason to know the lyrics and the steps to Fire Hydrant Red Lipstick from the Picture Face Lizzie cartoon show. But I've done the moves so many times, it's gotten kind of boring. So I squeeze my eyes shut and work up the courage to do my own steps. Miss Irina calls out, "That is how it must be." For a second, I don't even care about Picture Face Lizzie. Everyone is talking about the Dizzy Lizzie portal, which now includes lizards, the way of turning all your picture face images into reptile faces. Cool animals remind me of our family trip to Yellowstone. It was so much fun and so pretty. I tell everyone about seeing water and steam explode from the rocks, watching foxes jump into piles of snow, and riding on a snowmobile past bison, deer, and the most beautiful scenery you could ever imagine. I feel like it's been a while since I wanted to talk about anything other than Picture Face Lizzie. Sydney is having a beach birthday party, and everyone's supposed to bring their aquafied Lizzies using our underwater Liz gear, goggle, cams sold separately. We take videos of each other swimming with our Liz squad at the shoreline. But after a while, I leave my Lizzie on my towel so I'm not worried about losing her in the ocean, and everyone else does too. I look around and realize we're all playing in the giant waves and none of us are holding our picture face Lizzies. Ava comes to my house for a sleepover, which I'm kind of nervous about because my house isn't nearly as big or as cool as hers. She arrives at 4:40 p.m. with five of her favorite Lizzies. But when she sees my own oven-baked clay, mini foods, and furniture, she wants to make those instead. So we do. I show her how to make clay cherries, clay popsicles, a clay snail, and even a day bowling ball with clay pins. A clay bowling ball with clay pins. In the morning, Ava almost forgets to take her five picture face Lizzies because we never even played with them. My name is Eve Tanya. I have a lot. I have sneakers that light up, one big lava lamp, a hedgehog named Snoop Hogg, a saltwater fish tank, a freshwater turtle tank, a refrigerator full of adult food, my dad's protein shakes and my mom's flavored yogurts, a cupboard full of kid food, still mostly mac and cheese, a bin full of toys, a desk full of crayons, a three-legged lizard, two cool brothers, who I'll tell you all about next time, parents, who I love beyond words, and a puppy named Bluster. And sure, I finally got that picture face Lizzie I begged for. But I also got something much more important, something my Nana calls perspective. See, my life is anything but a tragedy, because not only do I have everything I could ever need, anything that I would ever want, but I have friends, family, and memories that are worth more than anything with a price tag on it. Although I do hear they're releasing new Liz Eyes, which are AR glasses that allow you to see what Lizzie sees. Nah, I'm good. The power of your name. Your name is Alice. A melody of letters that thrum and hum, that croon to the rhythm of your name. It is a beat, a rat-a-tat, a that-do-ri, that-do-ri, thrum, a swish and a slide that dances across your tongue. Your name is celebration, the sound of welcome, glowing, fizzling, popping, the day you were born. It is a declaration, short as a one-word poem, or long as a sweep of stairs to the stars. Your name says, "This is me." Your name is electricity, a crackle and a sizzle in your very cells, the snap pop of your essence, your presence, your superpower. It is a feast of sounds, flavored, a spicy lit, a sweet caress, lemony, melony, buttery, fluttery, a blessing of cadence and flow. Your name is gift, plucked from your family tree with roots that meander or twine or burrow deep, air, water, earth, sky. Hope lives in every name, prayers sung, dreams hung, plans strung, for happy, healthy, heartful days. It is your inspiration, a step it up, make it rain, brush your shoulder refrain, a reminder to your brain that you are. Your name is a journey, a gathering of tales from times gone by, to the moments of your now, to the what may be's. Your name is knowledge, a slow, as you grow, knowing of your true self and your place in the world. Fill that space with love and grace. Mighty is your name, a flex your muscles, fire in your belly, soar and swoop kind of name. Your name is North Star, the sweep of it on paper, the breath of it in the air, the music of it, your guiding light. Your name is opportunity, a window or a door, or maybe an opening of a book, a peek into the story of you. Like you, your name is a promise, a bouquet of delicious, of precious sweetness, bright refreshing, a hint of possibilities. Quintessential is your name, the idea of you, the spirit of you, the quality that's too cool for school you. Let no one rule you. You are the only you. Spoken quietly or shouted out, let your name ring. It is the sweetest ballad you can sing. Your treasure without measure. Unleash your name. Vibrosonic, wonderific, X's and O's to all that makes you zesty, zingy, zen, sensation, you. If you live here, if you live in a treehouse, you'll need to be a good listener. If you live on a spaceship, keep curious, for there is wonder all around. If you live on a train, you know that everything changes. If you live in a burrow, everyone snuggles. If you live in a castle, the view is better when shared with friends. If you live in a candy store, you might grow tired of candy. If you live in a garden, your patience will be rewarded. If you live on a farm, you'll see all kinds of families each day. If you live in a dollhouse, you will have to become very little indeed. If you live in a skyscraper, it's good to get along with your neighbors. If you live in a submarine, you must like strange visitors. The opposite is true if you live in a lighthouse. If you live in a nest, you need to be ready to leave when it's time. If you live in a house, may you have many books and nooks in which to read them. And if you live in a book, you'll always have a good story to tell. A House of Love. There was an old house at the top of a hill with many drafty rooms. Inside, there were doors that slammed and stairs that creaked and windows with holes in the glass where the wind whistled through and sounded like music. A tall oak tree grew in the front yard, and a sprawling holly tree in the back had plenty of branches for sitting. A big family lived inside. There were 5 girls, 2 boys, a mama, a papa, and a rescue dog named Phyllis. When everyone was home, the rooms exploded with conversation, laughter, and sometimes even an argument. Mia Valentina was the youngest. February 14th was her favorite day of the year because it was Valentine's Day and her name meant My Valentine. "Do you think the kids will be home in time for the party?" Mia asked her mother. "Absolutely," Mama assured her. "What if Grace's game goes into overtime? What if there's another blizzard and they can't get back over the mountain? What if the car breaks down?" Mia may have been the youngest, but even she knew everything they owned was old. "There's no more snow in the forecast, and the station wagon is in good shape." Mia was relieved. "No one in the Amore family will ever miss Valentine's Day. I'll make sure of that, and you can help." "I can?" Mia was excited. Mama and Mia climbed the dusty stairs to the attic. Mama found the bin marked Valentine's Day. It was stuffed full with red decorations, long tinsel garlands, glitter hearts, cupboard cupids with velvet arrows, and lace dollies. Mia helped Mama carry the box down to the kitchen. They placed the bin on the antique washing machine. "Before we decorate, we must do our chores," Mama smiled. "I will help," Mia Valentina promised, and she did. Mia poured bubbly pine soap into a bucket. She dusted the low places where Mama couldn't reach, while Mama dusted the high places where Mia couldn't reach. Mia brushed Phyllis until her coat was shiny, and then she tied a shiny red party bow around the pup's neck. Mia watched as Mama washed the windows, careful to clean around the buttons her daughters had glued over the holes in the glass to keep out the cold. "Papa wants to get new windows someday, but I like the polka dots myself," Mama stood back and grinned. "Me too," Mia agreed. The parlor was the saddest room in the house. Sweeping and polishing and buffing would not help it one bit. "I really have to do something with this room," Mama said. Dull strips of faded brown wallpaper clung to the walls. "May I finally rip it down?" Mia Valentina asked. Yes, but be careful. You never know when you will find a treasure in an old house, Mama said before she went upstairs to straighten up the bedrooms. Mia stretched and reached and pulled and peeled the brown wallpaper off the parlor walls. When she was done, she rolled a shard of the brown paper into a tube, turned it into a telescope, and spied through the hole like a pirate. Ahoy there, Mia, Mama said from the doorway as she looked around the parlor. Mia peered at her mother through the paper telescope. Mama looked like she was waving at her through the porthole of a ship. I knew you'd find a treasure, Mama beamed. A pretty wallpaper with hundreds of roses blooming inside a white trellis had been hidden under that brown, dull wallpaper all along. It's an inside garden, Mia marveled. You made it one. Now this room looks like our Appalachian Mountains in springtime, Mama said as she went to the foyer and lifted her garden shears out of the basket on the shelf. Mia watched through a polka dot window as Mama stood on her tiptoes and snipped a perfect bare limb with many small branches from the oak tree. She waved at Mia with a branch as she trudged across the yard. Mama shoved the bare branch into the cracked pickle crock. Good one, she said. Mama stood on her tiptoes again. This time, she pulled a bag of gumdrops from the shelf. She strung the red, orange, lavender, and green gumdrops with a sewing needle threaded with gold. She made a knot in the thread, which became a loop. Mama handed a gumdrop to Mia, who hung it on the tree. One by one, Mama made them, and Mia hung them. Soon, the candy tree shimmered with sparkling gumdrops. Now it's perfect, Mia said. I have four extra gumdrops. Mama placed them in Mia's hand. Mia savored the orange gumdrop, gave the green one to Phyllis, and put the other two in her pocket for later. Happy with their tree, Mia and Mama got to work and festooned the old house with the decorations from the bin. Top to bottom they went, up the stairs, through the rooms, and down the banister. Every room was bezadled. Every corner had a cupid. Every door a garland. Mama opened her purse and pulled out a handful of lollipops. She put them in an empty flower vase, just like real roses. Then Mama tied a red velvet ribbon around the firewood in the kitchen. Mother and daughter unfurled a garland down the hallway on the way to the parlor. Hmm, Mama said as she stood in the parlor. This room is missing something. Mama cut picture frames out of construction paper and hung them on the rose-covered walls. What do you think, Mia Valentina? The frames are empty. What should we do? Let's fill them with valentines, Mia suggested, one for each of my brothers and sisters. They would like that, Mama agreed. After all, amor means love in Italian. So Mama sat down on the floor next to Mia. Mama made hearts while Mia made art. Mia drew a basketball for Grace because she loved to play. She drew a rocket ship for Helen because she loved science. Massimo loved trucks, so Mia drew one. Olivia wanted a kitten, so Mia drew one with whiskers and eyes. Bob slept with his baseball glove, so Mia drew a ball to go with it. And Elsa, who spent every spare moment climbing the holly tree, got a squirrel. Mama hung the valentines inside the frames. They're funny, Mia Valentina giggled. Mama checked the clock. Oh, no, we have to bake before everyone gets home, she cried. Don't worry, Mama, I'll help. Mia followed her mother into the kitchen. Mia helped her mother measure the flour and sugar to sift into a mixing bowl. They mashed butter, cracked eggs, and poured milk into the bowl. Mama whipped the mixture. Mia helped pour the batter into the cupcake tin. Soon, the entire house smelled like vanilla. It was time to make the frosting. Mama whisked the small butter, sugar, and cream. Together, they frosted and frosted and frosted until every cupcake had a smooth white cap. They sprinkled and sprinkled and sprinkled the frosting with pink sugar until every cupcake glittered. Womp! The kitchen door flew open. One by one, Mia's brothers and sisters, Grace, Helen, Massimo, Olivia, Bob, and Elsa, poured into the house, followed by Papa, who was so tall and big, he brought the chill of the winter wind inside. Phyllis began to bark and run around the children as they peeled off their mittens and hung up their hats, scarves, and coats, and Bob's baseball glove. "How did it go?" Mama asked. "We won," Grace, the eldest and the tallest basketball player on her team, said proudly. "Happy Valentine's Day," Papa exclaimed, "for you." Papa gave Mama a gold box of chocolate-covered cherries along with a kiss. Time to decorate the kitchen door. Mama opened the junk drawer. Helen grabbed one wheel of scotch tape, Bob another, and Olivia another. Massimo gathered the loose paper valentines Mama had saved in the bottom of the bin. "Careful," Mama said in a loud voice. "These old valentines are family heirlooms." The Amore children formed a shaky pyramid with Mia crawling to the top. The kitchen door was soon covered with the old valentines. "Hey, kids, be careful," Papa chided them. "We aren't a circus act." "Since when?" Mama winked. As the pyramid collapsed, the pile of Amore children laughed. "Mia, show the kids what you made in the parlor," Mama suggested. The children ran to the parlor at once, causing a traffic jam. "Look, roses everywhere," Elsa twirled. "And valentines," Mia pointed. The children laughed at their funny valentines, but no one noticed one was missing. No one had made Mia Valentina a valentine. She pretended not to be sad, but she was. The day with Mama had been so special, but could Mama really have forgotten about her? "Time to set the table," Papa hollered. The children made a stampede and ran back to the kitchen. Mama sat in the kitchen with her feet up and sampled a chocolate-covered cherry as Papa made the tomato sauce for the macaroni. Soon, the polka dot windows were fogged with steam as the pasta boiled on the stove. The children set the table. Papa placed the macaroni, salad, and bread on the table. Mama lit the candles. The family sat down to dinner as the gumdrop tree twinkled in the window and the stack of cupcakes shimmered on the counter. Even though February 14th was Mia's favorite day, the Valentine party just wasn't the same. Phyllis nudged Mia from her place under the table as if she understood. After dinner and games, the seven Amore children took turns and stood at the bathroom mirror in their pajamas and scrubbed, brushed, and rinsed until they glistened. They hung their washclothes to dry on the antique tub with lion's feet. Mia Valentina climbed into bed. She sunk into the soft mattress like a spoon in vanilla cake batter. When she heard a crinkle, she sat up and lifted the blanket. But there was nothing under it. She lifted the sheet. There was nothing there either. She lifted her pillow. There it was, a valentine just for her. Mia had not been forgotten after all. Tomorrow, she'd ask Mama to make a frame, and she would hang it in the parlor of roses with the others. Phyllis jumped up onto Mia's bed. Mia grabbed the last two gumdrops and gave Phyllis the lavender one. She saved the red one for another day. Mia fell asleep with a smile on her face and her very own Valentine in her hand. The house on the hill didn't have the best heat, or the newest wallpaper, or windows with smooth glass, but it did have a candy tree, 7 children full of macaroni and cupcakes, and enough Valentines to wallpaper the world. It only took one special holiday to make a house with stairs that creaked, doors that slammed, windows that whistled, and a parlor of roses became the house of love. And it turned out there was so much love inside that there weren't enough rooms in the old house to hold it. And this is just a reminder. My name is Andy Bombeck, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour. And as I mentioned earlier today, for the second half hour, I'm going to continue reading the novel that I've been reading now for about, 6 months, and possibly finish the novel, The 57 Bus, a true story of two teenagers and the crime that changed their lives. One teenager in a skirt, one teenager with a lighter, one moment that changes both of their lives forever. If it weren't for the 57 bus, Sasha and Richard never would have met. Both were high school students in Oakland, California, one of the most diverse cities in the country. But they inhabited different worlds. Sasha lived in the middle-class foothills and attended a small private school. Richard lived in the economically challenged flatlands and attended a large public one. After school each day, their paths overlapped on the bus for a mere 8 minutes. But one afternoon, a single reckless act left Sasha severely burned and Richard charged with 2 hate crimes and facing life imprisonment. The case garnered international attention, thrusting both teenagers into the spotlight. But in the 57 bus, author Daishika Slater shows that what might at first seem like a simple matter of right and wrong, justice and injustice, victim and criminal, is something more complicated and far more breathtaking. This true story, first chronicled in the New York Times Magazine by Slater and artfully, compassionately, and expertly expanded upon here, is a riveting exploration of race, class, gender, identity, morality, and forgiveness. Told with honesty and insight gleaned from both teens' lives, the 57 bus will inspire you to rethink all you know about crime, punishment, and empathy. Okay, last week, during Richard's second progress report, to determine whether he should spend the next 5 years instead of 7 more years incarcerated, Carl, Sasha's dad, read a statement saying they wished they had read the letters that Richard sent them before the sentencing. They also hoped Richard would be an advocate for LGBTQ rights. He said that Sasha, Debbie, and himself had forgiven Richard. And that's where I left off last week. A level of maturity. The record should reflect that the court has read the fairly voluminous records that have been provided, Judge DeLucci said when Richard returned to court the next week. It was a positive report, the judge noted. Richard was attending school, participating in treatment, and had expressed interest in getting a job at the facility. He hadn't had any disciplinary actions. The staff noted that he was reserved and quiet and tended to keep to himself. But they commended him for limiting his interactions so that he is not drawn into too much negativity. All in all, DeLucci told Richard the report indicated a level of maturity that you didn't exhibit on the day of the offense. In addition, he continued, Sasha's family has made it clear what their position is, and that should be considered. With that, he modified Richard's sentence from 7 years to 5 years. With credit for time served, he would be out just before his 21st birthday. It was his recommendation that Richard serve the totality of that time in the juvenile system. Jasmine's boss had given her the day off to attend the hearing. When it was over, she stood smiling in the hallway, looking slightly dazed. It's still a long time, she said, 3 years. She had spent the weekend with her cousin, Regis, attending the San Francisco LGBT Pride celebration. Now she was planning to take advantage of the rare day off and do some errands. First on the list, wash her car. It's such a release, she said in the elevator. She leaned her head back against the wall and raised her eyes to the ceiling before correcting herself. Relief. Andrew and the binary. 5 months after Richard was sentenced, Andrew and Sasha got together for dinner at a Latin American cafe in Berkeley. They hadn't seen each other much over the previous couple years, but now Sasha was in town for winter break, and they were getting together for the second time in as many weeks. They'd already had that initial, "What are you up to these days?" conversation, and over dinner, they just talked the way they used to about the world and what it was and what it should be. They talked about revolution versus reform and anarchism versus socialism, and Andrew was struck, as he always had been, by the way Sasha carefully considered things instead of just echoing the opinions of other people. Andrew was 18 now. His glasses were rimless at the bottom, his nose pierced at the septum. He identified as a gay man. Few people knew his trans status. He kept it on the down low. Yet when straight men treated him like a bro, he felt a familiar sense of disorientation. For how vehemently I felt like I wasn't a girl, I have to say, being a boy isn't super great either, he admitted. Both sides have such bullshit baggage attached to them. If being a man meant always having to act confident and never being able to admit feeling sadness or self-doubt, it was just as much of a trap as being a woman was. He was happier now than he'd been before he transitioned, but he still yearned for something else, someplace outside of gender. Actually, he said, I'm starting to identify a little bit as, I don't even know the word I want to use yet. I like androgynous. I like genderqueer. What held him back? Fear. Fear of other people's judgments, their questions, their hostility, their fascination. Because I fall neatly within the binary, I feel completely right now, he explained. But if I were to radically shift my appearance in a way that was more androgynous, I don't know how comfortable that would be for me. I mean, I've already been asked enough questions about my genitals. I'm just done with that. Birthdays. Richard turned 18 in Alameda County Juvenile Hall just before being transferred back to Chad. Individual birthdays aren't celebrated in juvenile hall, so it was a day exactly like any other day. Richard was used to that by now. He hadn't spent a birthday at home since he turned 14. His 15th, 16th, 17th, and now 18th birthdays had all been spent locked up. Back at Chad, Richard earned his high school diploma and then began taking vocational classes, earning certificates in programs like irrigation design and forklift driving. He worked in the barbershop for a while, then got a job working for Free Venture, an environmentally certified nonprofit that refurbishes and recycles e-waste on site. At Free Venture, he earned $9.70 an hour, which allowed him to start paying off the $2,100 he had been fined as part of his plea bargain, and also deposit money into a savings account for his eventual release. It was one of the best jobs at the facility and one of the hardest to get, but Richard was doing exceptionally well. He had already attained incentive level A, the highest incentive level a young inmate could achieve, and he was housed among other low-risk youths in a hall where the atmosphere was generally relaxed. In the evenings, kids watched TV or played ping pong and dominoes in the day room or settled in to make phone calls at one of the two payphones. Richard held himself a bit aloof, slow to trust, slow to warm. He didn't smile much. Each night he returned to a 6 by 8 foot cell with a metal sink and toilet. On his desk, he kept a Bible, some folded paper crafts, and a television he had purchased with money he had earned at Free Venture. Neat rows of family snapshots were taped to the wall. All the people he loved the most, bright-eyed, grinning, frozen in time. He slept in the lower berth of a metal bunk bed. The top berth had no mattress, and he used it to display the vocational and educational certificates he'd earned at CHAD, the squares of colored paper arranged in orderly lines. Beside them, he placed a printout of the poem Invictus by William Ernest Henley. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. He had another two birthdays still to celebrate behind bars, his 19th and his 20th. Sometime before his 21st, a Crown Victoria cage car would take him back to Alameda County Juvenile Hall, where he would be processed and then released. After that, he would finally complete the journey home he began on the afternoon of November the 4th, 2013. After that, the next chapter of his life would finally begin. 1001 No Longer Blank White Cards. In January 2016, just before going back to school for their sophomore years of college, Sasha and Michael got together at Maybeck to play the index card game. The game was still fun, the in-joke still funny, even if some of the references had been lost in the mist of time. Sasha could still effortlessly layer a lisp over a Russian accent when the cards required it. Michael still wore a gray beanie, which was good because there was still a card that said, "Steal Michael's beanie." "Have you ever heard of a little word they called they?" Sasha remarked after pulling Lunista sleeping pills, a card that used he-she pronouns. "Player must play with his or her forehead on the table." It was an old line, one that dated from when Sasha was first trying to get people to remember gender-neutral pronouns. Except now, it was a joke instead of a reminder. Nobody needed reminding except the card, which had been written before Sasha was Sasha. A couple days earlier, Michael and Sasha had digitally scanned the full stack of index cards for posterity. As they went through the deck, they'd passed over the ones that mentioned someone named Luke. One featured a drawing of a pen and a bottle of ink. Luke's fountain pen, it said, draw a card. It was kind of a weak pun, not nearly as good as many of the cards that came later, but after talking it over, the two decided to leave the Luke cards in the deck. After all, Sasha said, they were part of the historical record. A lot had changed since the beginning of high school, including Sasha's name, pronouns, and style of dress. But in all the important ways, Sasha was still Sasha. They still loved cats, cartoons, games, and hats. And they were still, as they'd once written on their blog, the biggest bus nerd you will ever meet. Now that love of buses had become an academic focus, they had decided to major in urban planning and hoped to eventually get a job designing or improving public transit systems. I might take public transit even if I wasn't in love with it, Sasha explained, but the reason I'm studying it is because I have this personal love for it. That love, well, you could ask Sasha to explain it, but you'd be wasting your time. They could no more explain loving buses than they could explain loving the color purple. I'm an autistic kid with a special interest, Sasha said and smiled. That's probably the best answer I can give. All right, that concludes the book, but these are some gender neutrality milestones. 2007, Nepal's Supreme Court ordered the government to issue citizenship ID cards that allow people to describe themselves as third gender or other. 2013, Australia gives citizens a choice of three official genders, male, female, and X. Germany gives parents a choice of three gender options when filling out a newborn's birth certificate, male, female, and undetermined. 2014, Facebook begins allowing users to self-identify as something other than male or female. Denmark gives its citizens the choice of three official genders, male, female, and X. In 2015, the White House designates a gender-neutral bathroom for visitors and staff. Target announces they're removing gender-based signs from their toy and furnishing aisles. Malta and Nepal join the list of countries offering their citizens the choice of an official third gender. The Oxford English Dictionary adds the gender-neutral prefix MX to its lexicon as an alternative to Mr. or Mrs., Mrs. or Miss. It also adds the word cisgender. Disney removes the gender categories from its Halloween costumes. The Washington Post updates its style manual to allow writers to use the pronoun they to refer to an individual, calling it the only sensible solution to English's lack of gender-neutral third-person singular personal pronoun. The American Dialect Society chooses the singular gender-neutral pronoun they as their word of the year. Amico Gabrielle Blue, a resident of Ashland, Oregon, goes to court to legally change their gender to neutral. The request is denied, but afterward, the judge tells a reporter, "I would have been happy to do it if I thought it was legal." 2016, North Carolina passes the Public Facilities Privacy and Security Act, requiring people to use public bathrooms according to the biological sex on their birth certificate. Merriam-Webster adds the words cisgender and genderqueer to the dictionary. The Obama administration directs the nation's schools to provide students with access to bathrooms and locker rooms that match their chosen gender identity. A retired U.S. Army sergeant named Jamie Shoup receives permission from an Oregon court to legally change their gender to non-binary, becoming the first U.S. person to do so. 2017, after losing, according to PolitiFact, an estimated $500 million in revenue and the chance to hoist the 2017 NBA All-Star Game, North Carolina lawmakers vote to repeal the state's Public Facilities Privacy and Security Act, known as the Bathroom Bill. But while the replacement legislation eliminates the requirement that people use the bathroom for the gender they were assigned at birth, it keeps state legislators in charge of future bathroom policies. The Trump administration eliminates the Obama administration guidelines that directed schools provide transgender students with access to bathrooms and locker rooms matching their gender identity. The Showtime drama Billions introduces Taylor, television's first non-binary character. The MTV Movie and TV Awards become the first major acting awards to eliminate gendered categories for performance. Emma Watson won the All-Inclusive Category Best Actor Award, which was presented by non-binary actor Asia Kate Dillon. Here's a few numbers for U.S. juvenile incarceration. Number of juveniles head in correctional facilities on any given day, 54,148. The average cost of juvenile incarceration for one 12-month stay, $146,302. Percentage of juveniles who are African American, 16. Percentage of incarcerated youths who are African American, 41. Percentage of African American youths who do their time in an adult prison, 58%. Number of people currently serving life sentences without the possibility of parole for crimes committed as juveniles, 2,570. And that's all the time that we have for today. I wanted to say hi to all the listeners out there, and I want to encourage everyone to tune in next week when I begin a brand new novel. Until then, I hope everyone has a great day and a fantastic week. So long and take care, everyone. Goodbye.